Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 9. Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers. Text 45. Yanmaitunari grihamedi sukham hitucham. Kanduyanena karayo iva dukkha dukkham. Tripyanti neha kripana bahu dukkha bhaja. Kanduti vanmanasi jam visheta dira. Translation. Sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Grihamedis, so-called grihastas, who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of distress. The kripanas, the fools, who are just the opposite of brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. Those who are dhira, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching, are not subjected to the sufferings of fools and rascals. Purport. Materialists think that sexual indulgence is the greatest happiness in this material world, and therefore they make elaborate plans to satisfy their senses, especially the genitals. This is generally found everywhere, and specifically found in the Western world, where there are regular arrangements to satisfy sex life in different ways. Actually, however, this has not made anyone happy. Even the hippies, who have given up all the materialistic comforts of their fathers and grandfathers, cannot give up the sensational happiness of sex life. Such persons are described here as kripanas, misers. The human form of life is a great asset, for in this life, one can fulfill the goal of existence. Unfortunately, however, because of a lack of education and culture, people are victimized by the false happiness of sex life. Prahlad Maharaj therefore advises one not to be misled by this civilization of sense gratification, and especially not by sex life. Rather, one should be sober, avoid sense gratification, and be Krishna conscious. The lusty person, who is compared to a foolish miser, never gets happiness by sense gratification. The influence of material nature is very difficult to surpass, but as stated by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, mam eva ye prapadyante, mayam etam tarantite. If one voluntarily submits to the lotus feet of Krishna, he can be saved very easily. In reference to the low-grade happiness of sex life, Yamunacharya says in this connection, Yadavadi mama chitta krishna padada vinde nava nava rasa dama yudyata runtum asit tadavadi batanari sangame smaryamani bhavati mukha vikara shushtu nishtivanam cha. Since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with distaste. Yamunacharya had formerly been a great king who enjoyed sexual happiness in various ways. But since he later engaged himself in the service of the Lord, he enjoyed spiritual bliss and hated to think of sex life. If sexual thoughts came to him, he would spit with disgust. Translation. You can analyze this verse in terms of ISKCON's sociological history, as well as the history of the mundane world. As Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was reminding me, he said, 15, 20 years ago, if you would speak on this verse in certain places, the householders would know about it in advance and stay in their houses locked up with the doors barred. And of course, the brahmacharis would rejoice. Kijai, kijai, the Yanmai Tunani verse is coming tomorrow. Actually, this is not a brahmachari verse. This is a verse for everyone. It has ramifications for the individual devotee, no matter what ashram, and it has ramifications for all of human society. All the ashramas, the four ashramas, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas, they are classified in relation to the itching problem. That is the systematic categorization brought about by the ashrama system. It's all in relation to the itch. In other words, that itching is such a mighty problem that there needs to be a complete social arrangement how to deal with it if one wants to be a progressive human being. To be a progressive human being and cope with the itch monster is not simply the prerogative of the, it's not simply the quest of the brahmachari ashram. As you read in this verse and purport, all of human society is meant to cope with this. And there are different styles for coping with the itch monster, but it must be coped with. In other words, there's the brahmachari style of coping, there's the grihastha style of coping, there's the vanaprastha style of coping and the sannyas style of coping. Srila Prabhupada would often point out, look at this social system, look at the ashram system, and you figure in 3 out of 4 ashrams, there's no activity of the type described in this verse. In one ashram, it's restricted. So that system should make you think that something has to be done about this itching problem. If I was speaking in the West on this verse, where everything is very explicit, I would be more explicit. Some of you are preaching in the West, and hopefully in the future, as you all become more and more solidified in the transcendental ecstasy of the brahmachari ashram, more of you will also be seeing what there is to be seen in that other part of the world, which, as Prabhupada points out in the purport, basically all boils down to this one activity. Needless to say, now that same philosophy, if you want to call it that, is being projected in mass to India. So if I was speaking in the Western world, I would be more explicit, because there's so many social problems just because of people can't understand the need to deal with this itching monster. So much havoc. Families destroyed, no conception of what a family is, even. Teenagers destroyed, university students destroyed, and the number one destroying principle is this activity described in this verse. Young people are immersed in this activity since the age of 13, sometimes 12, they never get a chance to consolidate properly, even materially. I've explained over the years in speaking here some of the highlights of what goes on in the Wild West. I don't need to go in detail. The wreckage is horrible. So horrible that, basically speaking, my conclusion is if you want to preach effectively in the Western world, your preaching efforts have to be aligned with a naturopath, some kind of doctor, and a psychological counselor. Because the young people in mass, except very fortunate ones, they are just destroyed by intoxication and illicit sex from a young age. And to try to take such persons, if they approach Krishna consciousness, and just put them straight into an ashram situation, and not deal with their total devastation since the age of 12 and 13, it doesn't work. Preaching in the Western world means dealing with social devastation, for the most part. There are fortunate ones, but they are exceptions. Generally, there is devastation because of lack of proper family. I'll give you a few examples only. We don't want to be sensationalistic, but we want to be realistic. We want to understand what we are dealing with. For example, in New Zealand, Australia, many devotees are coming from very wealthy families, very respectable families, educated people, prosperous. But the parents are convinced that the best way to raise their sons and daughters is that when they're 13, maximum 14, don't let it go beyond the age of 14, when they have their boyfriends and girlfriends, the partner should be invited to live at home with their son or daughter. 50% of the devotees I deal with come from this kind of background, in which the parents think this is enlightened, this is advanced civilization. Sometimes I even plead with the parents whose children, one child comes to Krishna consciousness and they have other children who are younger. I say, please don't do this to your younger children, what you did to this older child who's now become a devotee. It's so damaging. The parents just look at me with a blank stare, like, what is the problem? Our daughter is 14. Why isn't it better that her boyfriend comes and lives with her in our house? Isn't this, who in the world would think otherwise? They just look at me with blank stares. Like, don't you understand? Where are you coming from? And then their own son or daughter who became a devotee tries to explain, Mother, Father, I appreciate how you brought me up in such prosperity and education, but what you allowed me to do just destroyed my character, and it's taking me years now to regain my strength. So often I see that basically the first 2 or 3 years for young Western persons who come to Krishna consciousness, the first 2 or 3 years are a write-off. They just have to regain their physical health and regain their mental clarity. Indeed, the mass effect of overindulgence in sense gratification has destroyed society. If you find serious students, serious university students, generally, if they're going to be very serious students, they have to sacrifice. They can't become absorbed too much in this thing. But everyone else, they've been scarred to various degrees. So then how to take such persons and make them suitable instruments in Srila Prabhupada's movement takes a lot of effort. To clean them up physically, clean them up mentally, so that they can function in devotional service properly. In the Western ISKCON, many leaders have told me that, what is the use, in trying to preach to these young people? It's so much easier to preach to Indians. One temple president told me in North America,
school wants to deal with these young people? They're just so out of it. But the Indians are glorious. You don't have to feed them. You don't have to clothe them. You don't have to arrange their marriages. You don't have to do anything. You just be nice and collect the donations. That's all. Well, you deal with these young American or British, Australian, New Zealanders. You don't know. You put your heart and soul into raising them in Krishna consciousness, and later, they 2 years later, they sue you or they do so many things, you know. Who wants to be bothered with all this? They don't even know the basics of human life. It is true that comparatively, I've discussed this with many Western ISKCON leaders, that the times we grew up in, when we were teenagers in the 60s and 70s, that comparatively that was the Satya Yuga compared to now. Parents being divorced was looked down upon. You really couldn't venture very much into the Kali Yuga vices until you got out of the home when you're 18. Everyone looked forward in the 60s or 70s, the teenagers, when I'll be 18, then I leave home, I go to the university, then life begins. Now, forget it. 12 years old, 13. Because the teenagers of the 60s and 70s in the West have become parents now. So they have no idea what is a proper family. They pass that on to their children. So in this way, it just gets worse and worse and worse. I mentioned some years ago here, but you've probably forgotten, but it's a very striking example. One devotee, he was traveling with me around the world, and he was here at Chaupati when I was giving talks explaining this disease that has destroyed the Western world. And he was telling me after every class, "Jai Guru Maharaj, yes, it's just like that. You hit the nail right on the head." And I'm kind of fortunate, you know. My family situation wasn't so bad. My family background, you know, was more stable. I mean, you know, but I recognize that it's just total darkness out there. My parents, you know, they were simply divorced when I was 15. You know, but that's all. Everything else was fine. So we flew from. We left Chaupati. We flew back down under, and we landed at the airport. And then I went my way, he went his way. Okay, Guru Maharaj, I don't know, you know, because he was not a brahmachari, he was heading for a grihastha ashram. You know, I've got to get back to work in a few days, so I have to fix up where I'm going to stay, because I let my flat go. I stopped renting it because I was traveling with you for 3 months. So I'll just stay with my mother for a couple of nights, and then, yeah, I'll find my own place. Next morning, I get a call from him. I have to find somewhere else to stay. I can't believe it. I went home last night, and there is my mother. It was very prosperous. Everything is very educated. Not some low-class family or low-class home. No, everything very prosperous. I went home, and there... He was about 33 years old. There I found my mother, who is 60, with a young man who's 1 year younger than me. She was sitting on the couch when I walked in holding hands. I walked in, "I'm mother, I'm back." And then I looked and I said, "Mother, what is this?" And she just said, This is my partner. And so the young devotee, he was, you know, 33 years old, he was stunned. And he just took his bags and just walked out the door and just found some place in the forest to sleep. And the next day he called me. So this was the same one who I reminded him. Remember when I was just 2 weeks ago, I was speaking at Chaupati and you were, yes, yes, it's just like that, you know. Degradation everywhere, but fortunately my family wasn't so bad. Just see. Tragedy. Disaster. And it's considered acceptable. No one criticizes. Once you see the destruction caused by uncontrolled senses, then you don't take these verses as just some kind of maybe extreme or over the top. You actually read these verses and you see how they are solving all of society's problems. If you look at this verse minutely, and it does take a lot of contemplation and deliberation, it's not just for the brahmacharis, it's for everyone. If you look at this verse, you'll see that Srila Prabhupada has poured his heart and intelligence into every aspect of the synonyms, the translation, and the purport. He's giving you maximum mileage, so to speak. He's not just giving the basic word for words. He's amplifying. He's elucidating. So to make sure you don't miss the point. So I would advise everyone, not simply the brahmacharis. This is not just a brahmachari ki jai verse. This is a civilization ki jai verse. I advise everyone to just look at this, at these synonyms, the translation, purport, and with an attitude of self-purification. How can this be so? And where am I at in relation to this? How am I going to cope with this? What can I do to help society cope with this? It's a very, very purifying verse, purport, synonyms. The scientific principles are extraordinary. And indeed, it is a scientific principle presented in such a brilliant way so that we can assimilate. So Srila Prabhupada is talking that that activity, which is so cherished by the uncivilized, is compared to rubbing two hands to relieve an itch. We should not just let this metaphor go in one ear and out the other ear. You think about it. How can that be so? Since Srila Prabhupada put his heart and soul into presenting this knowledge, how can it be so? Let me see what this explanation does for me. It's very graphic, yes, and I won't be as graphic about it as I would be, you know, outside of India. But it is undeniably a very graphic explanation which can help your mind to become peaceful. Srila Prabhupada is pointing out, Prahlad Maharaj, of course, this is Prahlad Maharaj is offering this prayer to Nrisingadev. It's mercy for us that Prahlad's offering this prayer. Rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. You may know that if you get a mosquito bite right on your hand, it's sensitive parts of your hand, it can really become inflamed and itch. And sometimes, indeed, you rub your two hands together to relieve the itch. So Prahlad is giving us something to think about. I remember, as a young boy, I went to a school camp in the summer where they send school kids out into the country for a couple of weeks. And there are supervisors, teachers, keeping track of all the kids. And so they have like nature walks. So we were taken on a nature walk, and the nature teacher was pointing out the different plants, the different trees. But what caught all the little children's eyes was when mosquitoes would land on him, he would just let the mosquito bite and then fly away. And we were shocked. You're allowing yourself to be bitten by mosquitoes. Not only that, after they bite, you don't scratch. What's going on? And he explained. He said, if you don't bother them, and if you... Of course, these are American mosquitoes. They're different. He said, let's let them bite and go away, it doesn't itch. And if you don't scratch it, you're even more free from itching. So the kids were just shocked. You don't scratch and itch? How can that be? It just seemed like 1 + 1 = 2. Itch means scratch. A scientific principle. So the kids were astonished. You know, he let a mosquito bite him. And then secondly, after the mosquito bit him and there's a bump, he doesn't scratch it. So I never forgot that example. What this teacher has knowledge. He understands that although the circumstances are so intimidating, if he doesn't scratch, it'll be less suffering. And in fact, he can just peacefully go about his duties as a teacher. He's not deviated by such. So several of us school kids were just scratching our heads. And this is a revolutionary principle. I never forgot it. I thought it seemed to be a scientific fact. If there's an itch, you must scratch. And that is the assumption of materialistic society. In fact, materialistic society is grateful, thankful. Praise the Lord, we have itches. How wonderful, I feel an itch. That indeed is the characterization of society today, materialistic society. And they're projecting this mentality into India. Feel the itch. Rejoice, you have itches. Just scratch endlessly. You'll be so happy. Your society will be prosperous. Your children will be wonderful. This is what's going on. But Prahlad is giving us this brilliant scientific principle, and Srila Prabhupada has amplified it so much in the purport, that scratching the itch causes problems. Grihamedes, he's not talking about grihastas. Grihamedes, so-called grihastas, who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of distress. You can experiment based on Prahlad's scientific proposition here. Next time you get a mosquito bite, just decide whether you're going to scratch it or not, and see what your mind may have to go through in order to avoid scratching. Because you know, your intelligence tells you, if I scratch, the itch gets worse, right? But still, it's just hard to resist. I have this mosquito bite. Why not scratch it? Why not? And then in your mind comes the thought, okay, I'm intelligent. I know you shouldn't scratch very much. I'll just scratch one time. So, just... Okay, that's enough. I've scratched one time. That'll do it. I'm sure scratching one time and I'll, I won't scratch anymore. My scratching propensity will be, it'll be solved. Then a few minutes later, maybe just one more time. I said I would just scratch once, but maybe one more time won't hurt. One more time. Scratching. Okay. And then, of course, the itch starts to get worse and worse. Oh, what can be done, you know? I mean, we have to be practical, you know? I mean, after all, we live in material nature. And so you scratch the third time, and then after that, you've lost all control. The itch is just quadrupled, and... you've already abandoned your discipline, so then you just scratch vigorously, Like you can see on my arm here, there's a mark. That's from a mosquito bite where, you know, I scratched it too much and, you know, it becomes messy. So this is not just sensationalistic talk. This is a scientific principle coming from Prahlad Maharaj, and it's meant to make us think. It's actually a beautiful example, don't you think? It's so much insight, but you have to think about it. You can't just, oh, okay, next verse. Ah, yes. Yeah, okay, good to get away from that one. It's meant to be meditated on. And indeed, if you meditate on this scientific example, you'll get strength. You'll be able to see the whole process of material illusion and how to avoid it. As Prahlad says here, those who are dhīra, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching are not subjected to the sufferings of fools and rascals. Sufferings of fools and rascals. I thought it was pleasure. I thought the outcome was satisfaction, tranquility, and peace. I've always wondered about this point in observing life in the Western world. Everyone is absorbed in this activity. This way, that way, this way, that way. Why aren't they happy? This should cause you to think there must be an illusory energy. How is it that everyone is doing like this, and yet they're miserable, and their societies are wrecks? What's going on? According to the propaganda, by immersing in such activity, you should be peaceful, you should be tranquil, you should feel holistic, as the New Agers say. But instead, you see just mass destruction on an individual level also. So what's going on? Why is it that an activity that looks to be so inviting and so promising, so absorbing, it looks like that, but then the results are completely different? What is the conclusion? There must be an illusory energy. This is serious business. There's an energy of the Lord that makes things look different than what they actually are. And of course, Krishna himself points that out in Bhagavad Gita. Daivyesha gunamayi mamamaya. Yeah. There's an illusory energy at work that is practically impossible to overcome unless you surrender to Krishna. How is it that the results you get from what Prahlad Maharaj calls the itching activity are so different than what is promised? What's going on? It should really make you think. A great barrier to progress in Krishna consciousness is our taking the external world as it is, without understanding that indeed we're dealing with illusory energy. The whole ashram system is meant to impart to us that understanding that things aren't what they seem. That's the basic definition of maya, as you know, that which is not. So Prahlad is pointing out the central thing which is not how it appears. If we can dedicate this human form of life, regardless of what ashram we're in, if we dedicate our human form of life to dealing with this reality, we'll be successful. The different ashramas are just different styles how to deal with this itching monster. So please think. If such activity leads to happiness, why is everyone miserable? Why are there so many social problems? What's going on? What is it that's impelling persons to act in a way that's completely against their self-interest? This verse will help everyone to make the best use of their human form of life. I can tell a Prabhupada story in that connection. It was told to me by the devotee who it happened to. And once again, it's a graphic example, but it's not a brahmachari or sannyasi example. It's a human example meant to give us insight into the nature of Krishna's illusory energy so that we can become free. Devotee was fanning Srila Prabhupada in Krishna Balaram Mandir. And Prabhupada was chanting Jai Radha Madhava, and the devotee was fanning. And every once in a while, Prabhupada would look at the devotee who was fanning him and then look away. The devotee kept fanning, and Prabhupada would look at him and look away. And the devotee was starting to get nervous, like, maybe I'm fanning in the wrong way, or I don't know what. You know, he just kept fanning, and then Prabhupada would look, and he'd look away. So the devotee didn't know what was going on. So then Prabhupada finished chanting the Jai Radha Madhava, and he was doing the Prema Dhwani. And after he finished the Prema Dhwani, he looked at the devotee. He had never spoken to this devotee before. He looked at this devotee, and Prabhupada lifted up his arm. He had a... and he pulled back his kurta sleeve, and he just said to the devotee, "You feel an itch. You scratch one time. You feel an itch. You scratch two times. You scratch three times. You scratch more. Why do you stop?" And just looked at the devotee, and the devotee was like, "Why do I stop? Why does anyone stop?" And then Prabhupada answered his own question. "You stop not because you're satisfied, but because there's so much suffering. It's a bloody mess from your scratching. Therefore you stop. You don't stop because you're satisfied." Now, once again, this sounds, it's a very powerful example, but it's one of those Prabhupada says that we don't want to repeat too much. But if you think about it, it's a brilliant, ingenious scientific presentation. You don't stop because you're satisfied. You stop because life becomes full of distress, just like Prahlad Maharaj says here. Bahu dukkha bhaja, different varieties of material suffering. That's why you stop and you begin to reconsider. Oh, maybe there's another way to live. Maybe I should control my senses. Now I feel regret. That's why you stop. Not because, I feel so satisfied. Okay, now I can go on with my Krishna consciousness. It's not like that. So in just a few words, Srila Prabhupada imparted this ingenious scientific understanding. And this verse is in that same spirit, spoken by Prahlad Maharaj. Remember, Prahlad is a 5-year-old boy, and he's speaking like this. He got his realizations hearing from Narada Muni while Prahlad was in the womb of his mother. And he's speaking this he's praying to Lord Nrisimhadev, offering such prayers for our benefit. In a normal human society, people recognize it as a topmost career, battling with the itch monster. That is a career. That's an occupation. It's considered glorious in a normal human society. It's considered noble. But in today's world, it's considered strange. Why would you want to... not give in to the monster? It's not even a monster. It's pure delight. It's God's gift to us all. Often, in the Western world, even though in some countries people are not very religious, still, they generally give this response. Well, if it's not good to engage in these things, why did God give us these bodies? Why did God provide that propensity, that situation? It must be for us to indulge in. Ordinarily, they don't talk about God, but in this case, God gave it to us. It's a gift from God. And we are saying the real gift from God is the knowledge how to control our mind and senses by engaging the mind and senses in Krishna's service. Srila Prabhupada's pointing out in the purport the sociological implications. Because of a lack of education and culture, people are victimized by the false happiness of sex life. Prahlad Maharaj therefore advises one not to be misled by this civilization of sense gratification, and especially not by sex life. Being misled by it due to lack of culture and education. Where else are you going to find such culture and education other than in the Krishna conscious society? Certainly it is that way in the Western world. Of course, in India, even genuine impersonalists still recognize that one has to deal with these things. But for the most part, looking at the world as a whole, there's no education, there's no culture in dealing with these crucial points. And therefore, the devotees have to be able to establish such education and culture. Otherwise, who's going to do it? Devotees have to establish a culture and education of a regulated human form of life. And it's not easy to establish such an education and culture for everyone. But that's the mercy of the devotee on the fallen souls of this world. Srila Prabhupada commented another time that in this day and age, you cannot meditate for thousands of years like in other yugas when yogis would go into the Himalayas in solitude and just fix their mind on the Supreme Absolute Truth, whether as Brahman, Paramatma. You can't do that in this age. In this age, Srila Prabhupada said, our austerity is dealing with the crazed persons of the world who have been dazed by the illusory energy. That's our austerity. So indeed, it is very, very demanding, very exhausting work to establish proper education and culture. But that's the only way people will be saved from the devastation caused by surrendering to uncontrolled lust. As the years go by, a devotee appreciates more and more Prahlad Maharaj's statement. During the 20s and 30s especially, the hormones are very active and they dictate a reality of their own. According to scientists, when a man is 21, that's the peak of the hormone cycle. When I give this example in the Western world, the scientific data about the hormone cycle reaches the peak in a man at 21 and then slowly goes down. So when I say, when 21 is the peak, all the 21-year-old men in the audience, wow, great! I'm at the peak of the cycle. Oh, this is wonderful. They don't understand that serious work has to be done to deal with this hormone problem, which will slowly go down. If we take the time and effort to deal with this monster, no matter what ashram you're in, that is the point. All ashrams are meant for dealing with the monster. They're defined in terms of the monster. They offer different programs for how to deal with the monster. As the years go by, one is so happy, you begin to realize, I save so much trouble. Especially as the years go by, the decades go by, and you see how time does its tricks. Because even though the hormones are boiling, time is ticking. So then when you get into your 50s, 60s, 70s, if you haven't properly dealt with this monster, then you are in an unfortunate situation, very painful situation, in which the body is failing, but the mind is still active in such a way about such affairs. It's very painful. It is why, at least in the Western world, elderly people are often very mentally disturbed because it's a complete shock
that suddenly the body is no longer able to carry out the prime necessity of life. The desires are there, but the body is finished. What to do? It's very, very mentally painful. I remember another statement from Srila Prabhupada that I heard this when I was in my young 20s as a young devotee. He said, the more you engage in this itching activity when you're young, the more you will suffer in old age. For a devotee who has grappled with this monster according to the genuine methods, that devotee feels such peace and satisfaction later in life. How much trouble did I avoid? But we need an organized program of education and culture so that everyone has a chance to come out on the other side. And that organized program is the mercy of the devotee. So please think about this verse deeply. It's a very wonderful verse to confront yourself with. Maya makes things appear one way. Prahlad Maharaj is saying something else here. What's going on? And then you get the added point in the purport, the famous verse by Yamunacharya, in which he is letting you know loud and clear that there are different grades of happiness. Why try for the low grade? You see, Prahlad Maharaj says, Yan maitunadi grihamedi sukham hi tucham. Sukham hi tucham means there is a little happiness there, but it's so tiny, it's not even worth talking about. So we give credit where credit is due. Yes, there's some sukha there. But it's so little that we're entitled to say there's no happiness there. But if you want to be more scientifically precise, and you say, Sukham hi tucham. There's something there, but it is certainly insignificant. And what does the illusory energy make it seem? Ooh, this is so great. This is so all-encompassing. This is it. And what does Prahlad Maharaj say? Sukham hi tucham. So tiny. Not even worth talking about. These verses are for us to meditate upon. How can it be? Sukham hi tucham? Just look at the world around you. They make such a big thing about this. And yet it's actually, in terms of happiness, so insignificant. On the platform of Krishna consciousness, indeed, you'll have that realization. Just like sometimes walking in the back there, you feel some sprinkles of water in the air. Is that from, what, the air conditioning system of the big building in the back? Yes. Now, how many of you just fall to pieces every time that happens? Oh, no. I was walking in the back there, and water sprinkled on me. Oh, gosh. There's nothing to do but just to get into it. Drops of water fell from the sky on me. This never happened, has it? You just, nah. Just an insignificant thing. In this way, Prahlad Maharaj wants you to look at the most lethal attack by the illusory energy, which promises pleasure, but actually the happiness derived is so insignificant. Someone who's dira, who's sober, won't let his whole life be captured by such insignificance, an insignificant attempt for happiness. Just like none of you become swayed from your duties because a few drops of water from the air conditioning system in the tall building behind have fallen on you. None of you, whatever ashram you're in, you haven't gone to the senior devotees and said, oh, I was walking in the back, and drops of water came on me. What am I going to do? No one does that. What's the big deal? So that is the standard of real Krishna consciousness. And Yamunacharya is giving his testimony
that he's realized that there are different grades of happiness. So, yes, we give credit where credit is due. As the Shastra explains, that itching activity is the only happiness in the material world. But then look at it for what it's worth. Sukhamituchim, insignificant, comparatively. So where does all this problem come from anyway? Janmadiyasyataha. The absolute truth is that from whom everything emanates, everything is there in Krishna in purity, unlimited purity. Therefore, in the Supreme Absolute Truth, you will find romance. You will find the perfection of the loving dealings that human beings strive for in the wrong way in conditioned life. They strive with their material bodies to get the happiness, which is a perverted reflection of the genuine affairs of the spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada was once in his last year amongst us speaking at Hrishikesh when devotees were presenting challenges persons would make against Krishna. Oh, that Krishna's immoral. He engages in Rasleela. And Srila Prabhupada would vigorously defend. Are you trying to say the Supreme Absolute Truth is impotent? He has all potencies. They're all there in perfection. But although he has all potencies there in perfection, a respectful person doesn't talk about his intimate affairs in public. So devotees were thinking about that. And then Prabhupada gave a very, very practical example. He said, why are you here? You are here because of your mother and father's activity. Isn't that so? But do you go around talking about it? Do you go around talking about what your mother and father did in order that you could take birth? No, all of you. I don't speak about such things. But you are here. How did it happen? Did you fall from the sky? But you don't talk about it. Why? Out of respect for your parents. But everyone knows something went on, yes? But because you're dignified, respectful, cultured, you do not talk about it. Neither in public or even amongst your brothers and sisters, you don't talk about it. So Prabhupada's point was, you give that kind of respect to your mother and father, then why can't you give it to Krishna? He's the supreme father of everyone. Sarvayonishya kontaya murtaya sambhavantaya. Of all living entities, no matter what form they have, Krishna is the sea-giving father. So why shouldn't we respect the potency of the father? And why should we talk about it in a casual way or a condemning way? Who condemns mother and father for conceiving you? None of you have gone to your mother and father and said, I just want to know, why did you conceive me? You've never done that. Similarly, why can't we give at least that much respect to Krishna? Very practical example. How can you deny the Supreme Absolute Truth of potency? Everything is there in the Supreme. Janmadiyasataha. We must think that everything means everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo, mata sarvam pravartate. Krishna says, I'm the origin of everything. But how it's there in Krishna perfectly, that is something else. So we are not going to strip the Supreme Absolute Truth of his potencies to satisfy mundane intelligence. Sometimes people say, Krishna would be... He'd be very appealing if he just didn't have these certain activities. It'd be more easy to explain Krishna to the theologians, to the religious scholars, if he would just be minus certain leelas. The ironic thing, the interesting thing is, you want Krishna to be minus those leelas, but then in our conditioned life, we are mad after those leelas. Krishna shouldn't have what my materialistic mind is greedy for. Actually, Krishna has all that perfectly, flawlessly. Amala, without a spot of contamination. What we're getting at now is our root disease of envy. Why is Krishna the supreme enjoyer? He shouldn't have loving affairs, but I should have. Let us have a God that has no loving affairs. Then we can feel sorry for him. Yes, think about it. If God has no pastimes, no parents, no friends, no lovers, it's easy to worship him. You can feel sorry. Yes, praise God. Meanwhile, we have our own loving affairs, our friends, our family. You don't have that, God, but you should preserve our pastimes, even though you don't have any. This is actually envy. The full understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth is to accept the potency of the Supreme Lord displayed perfectly, parasya shakti abhividaiva shriyate, and to give Krishna respect, to talk about Krishna with dignity, that you don't discuss his personal pastimes of intimacy in a random way. You give him that much respect. When we look in our hearts and see this root disease of envy, it's horrible. I want to shut out Krishna and just have my own world of activities in which I will be satisfied. And then you start to visualize. Everything will go on according to my dreams, my hopes, my aspirations. This is why we're in the material world. Such a thing will never happen, but Maya allows us to dream in this way. And indeed, material existence is a dreamlike condition. We owe so much to Prahlad Maharaj for praying like this to Lord Nrisimhadev. We owe so much to Srila Prabhupada for expanding on this verse in such a detailed way. Please, not simply the brahmacharis, but all ashramas, when you get a chance, look closely at the word for word, the synonyms of this verse. Prabhupada has taken time to pack so much into it for our freedom, for our getting the real pleasure. And those who want to show the greatest compassion for the whole world by establishing education and culture so that people won't be victimized by this false happiness, please take note. This is the monster that's destroying the world. It's treated now in such a carefree way. The monster is even embraced. Oh, this is glorious. This is wonderful. But then look at the effects. Because we're servants of Lord Chaitanya, we want to help people, even though they've been destroyed by this monster. We want to help them. We just don't want to sit back and say, oh, well, what can be done? A Vaishnav can't stand back and just watch the people being devoured and watch human society destroyed. Let us all take this message of Prahlad Maharaj deep into our hearts and not be afraid of the graphic scientific description. It's mercy for everyone. It's a bridge all ashramas have to cross, one way or another. You have to cross the bridge. All right. Any questions? Yes?
Thank you for the wonderful class, Maharaj. This question was regarding, you're talking about the itch monster. So normally, when we tolerate the itch goes away. But in the case of material desires, even after many years of practice of Krishna consciousness, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, these desires keep coming. So now, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that whatever devotional service we do, that never goes waste. But on the other hand, Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur gives that example of the marriage party that was going rowing, and because the marriage party that was going rowing, but because the anchor was kept, all the rowing was practically useless. So if the material desires are not decreasing, does it mean that all the chanting and all the devotional service that one is doing is not effective? Or how do we reconcile these two examples?
We need to look at our life as a whole. And this is what Maya disrupts. Look at your whole life as a career dealing with the monster. Not just 4 years or 10 years. Look for a lifelong occupation. And then you'll be able to see things in proper perspective. It's not like, okay, you go to school for 6 or 8 years, you get your master's degree, you get your PhD, finished. No. All your life is meant for this ultimate success. So if you see your whole life in that way, you'll be able to plan accordingly. To pull the anchor out, there must be proper education and culture. So therefore, the intelligent devotee looks, where is that systematic education? Where is that structured culture? And you take shelter of the education, take shelter of the culture. Not just for a few years. You look at your whole life. This is my career. Mastering my mind and senses through engagement in devotional service. You don't know the full extent of the ups and downs. It's the nature of the Lucy energy to rattle you. Ha ha. 15 years you've been a brahmachari and still this is coming in your mind. Ha ha. It's intimidation. You have to know how to handle the intimidation of the illusory energy. And you have to know how to fight back. It's easy to fight back. Let's hear what Prahlad Maharaj has to say about this. And the illusory energy tells you, no, no, you don't want to look at that, do you? You've already read that verse so many times. You don't want to take a look at it again, do you? A devotee has to know how to deal with intimidation. The purpose of the intimidation is to cause you to slacken your grip on Krishna's lotus feet. And the main way that intimidation works is just see. 15, 20 years, and these thoughts sometimes come. You know what that means. Give up now. We must practically understand the process of purification. If you strive by right means within a culture, a proper culture and proper education, you will be successful. That's what Prahlad Maharaj is telling you. Kandutivan manasijam vishahe tadira. Those who are dira, who are sober and who tolerate, they're successful. Now the amazing thing is, it's not that only devotees tolerate. The whole material world, material existence requires toleration. In people's working affairs, so much tolerance is required working for a boss. Even if they have their own business, they have to tolerate. When they come home to their own families, they have to tolerate. Then why is it unusual for a devotee to tolerate?
Toleration is an inbuilt factor of existence in this world. So we choose how we want to tolerate. But toleration must always be there. It is a fact that although the intimidation by Maya may be there, the sweetness of bhakti that supersedes. Krishna has different energies. So it's not like everything is one-sided. Oh no, there was this attack of the illusory energy on my mind. But there was also the Hare Krishna mantra. There was also a wonderful kirtan like we had this morning. You have to be fair. Look at the whole picture. But the illusory energy's job is not to get you to see the whole picture. Just think about this intimidation, how I'm shaking you up. That is the reality. Then while that's going on, it's time for greeting the deities. It's time for Prabhupada's Guru Puja. And then you realize there are other influences that I can come under. Organize life so that indeed you're open to the Krishna influence at every moment. Then in spite of the contamination that's in the body and mind, you'll be successful. It's simply about placing yourself in the right situation. And with a longing heart, desire to hear the holy name with attention and be the humble servant of the Vaishnavas. You think Krishna's in the heart just enjoying our struggles? Just see how these devotees struggle with this impossible process of bhakti. Yes, bhakti is so exalted, but it's practically impossible to get. Just see how these devotees just struggle to attain the impossible. It is not like that. Sometimes unconsciously we think like Krishna's a sadist, you know, sadist, someone who enjoys others' suffering. I dangle this beautiful bhakti process in front of your eyes and then watch you suffer trying to get it. No, it is not like that. As we read in Bhagavatam, Krishna is more eager for us to go back to Godhead than we are. We have to learn how to see that. But the job of the illusory energy, once again, is to intimidate you and blot all that out of your mind. The more you choose Krishna, the more your choice muscles expand. And Krishna enjoys that. Love of Krishna depends on choice. Who wants forced love? Krishna, the supreme enjoyer, doesn't want forced love. So by our again and again choosing Krishna in spite of temptation and provocation, we build our choice muscles, and Krishna is pleased by that. There's so much of Krishna consciousness. Can be made easy by our understanding what is intimidation and how to deal with intimidation. If you want to get technical, Maya has two departments, the throwing potency and the covering potency. What's the throwing potency? You're doing some service nicely, and suddenly the illusory energy roars in your head. What are you doing? What do you think? Who do you think you are, a sadhu? Take a look at this. That's the throwing potency. And God, I can't believe it. After all these years, it's still coming to me. Yeah, this is the throwing potency. It shakes you up. And then comes step two, the covering potency. Once the illusory energy gets you in her clutches, then she covers you over. So that's the technical description of the way the illusory energy functions. But you can also say it's intimidation. You have to learn how to deal with it. You have to expect it in this world. But just see what you're doing as the intimidation sometimes goes on. You're serving Krishna, and you will become purified. All the ashramas are meant for purification. Any of the four ashramas, when done properly, will yield extraordinary results because Krishna is there in the center. It's not just ordinary varnashrama. It is daivi varnashrama. Krishna is there. So we have to remember that. Another thing you can do, practical, is think about the times in your life when you've really struggled to tolerate, really struggled to do something. Maybe in school, maybe at a job. Is Krishna asking that much from us? We've went through some extraordinary challenges in our material life. All right, I can speak for myself. When I was 14, my parents, they arranged a scholarship to these top prep schools where the richest people in America send their children, just like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, also the same situation. And so, although I was a top student in the city schools, the ordinary public schools, when I went to this posh, very aristocratic, in terms of academics, not in terms of behavior, private school, at first I was struggling. And I remember all the students, they were looking down, oh, just see, you know, they forced some of this diversity upon us just so that our school looks liberal, but yeah, we know how can they function properly in our atmosphere of high standards. But anyway, we have to put up with this because, you know, egalitarianism. So mainly I was struggling because it was such an emotional shock going from middle class background into the wealthiest settings of North America. So I was emotionally unsettled. So I remember, although I was just 14, the powers of determination for the material goals that came out of me. I'm going to go into the library every night while the other students are relaxing in the student hostels. I'm going to be in the library. I'm going to study night and day. Teachers were telling me, we think you're going to have to repeat the courses that you did in your preceding year in the city schools because those courses aren't up to the standard of our courses. So you may have to repeat all those courses you did the year before coming here. Oh, it's very intimidating. And the students were just looking like, ah, 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 ah. Yeah. Our school has to take one or two minority members. We know where you guys are at. Well, they had Kennedy kids there, Rockefeller kids. So I went into the library and I studied so much. This is just an example of that I personally remember. So much determination for a mundane goal. Of course, it's also karma, but still I remember the effort that I put in. The results are karmic, but the effort, I chose to put that much effort in. Then, after 3 months, by the arrangement of the illusory energy, I was at the top of the class. So to this day, I remember all that determination for something mundane. You can't do half that determination for Krishna. You can't tolerate. I remember tolerating the other students where,
just relaxing on weekends, and there were no girls at the school, so they could just just talk amongst themselves. Their classes 6 days a week. Actually, it gave a good idea for, it was like the remnants of Brahmachari culture. Perverted remnants. They had the clear understanding that you can't have the two sexes in the classroom together. No learning will go on. That was a fundamental principle of high class education in America and England. Now, forget it. Now they think the opposite. How can there be learning without the both genders together? But then it was different. So when the students would relax amongst themselves, there was no ladies around. There were no ladies for 2 hours in every direction. The school was isolated in the mountains. Now, ladies who are listening, you may think, oh, this is discrimination. No, the ladies had their high-class schools to themselves. It was equal, but just separate. And every 3 months, they would bus in some ladies for a school dance. Every 3 months. Otherwise, you never saw. Of course, the men's students were, they're in such anxiety, but... Even myself, I would sometimes lament to my parents, why did you send me to this school? It's all boys. Because now I thank my mother. Oh, thank you so much. She's wondering, what happened? You used to cry. You used to practically curse me for sending you away to this school. Now you're glorifying me. So the point is, I remember this effort. Why can't I do that for Krishna? Similarly, I know in all of your lives, so many of you are top students. You endeavored. So many of you were working or worked before you came to the Brahmacharya Ashram. You had to undergo austerity. So what's wrong with tolerating a bit for Krishna? Tolerating for the material energy, complete failure. Tolerating for Krishna, complete success. So this verse is speaking about education and culture necessary in society. This reminds me, even in material society, in the degraded West, there used to be this understanding that education and culture is required to deal with the lust impulse, and you don't mix the two genders. I'll just tell you a little more. Every 3 months, they would have a school dance, and the girls from the exclusive girls' schools would arrive in buses just for 4 hours. And, of course, the men would be they'd be practically out of their minds with hormones boiling. But wherever you looked at the social function, there would be school faculty members on patrol. No one could slip away. All the doors were watched. And then, 10 o'clock, the girls were put back on the bus to their exclusive school and sent away. And, of course, the men were all like, but that was considered high class. They were just maximum 4 men in one classroom. There's classes 6 days a week. It was like a perverted Brahmachari program. You 6 days a week of classes in classrooms of 4 students each. There's no way you could get away and space out. And then 6 days a week after classes, all morning, everyone had to play sports, no matter what your ability was. Of course, it's not Varnashram Dharma to make everyone play sports, but their idea was, you're a young man, you've got to do something with those energies. So during the day, we'll fry your brains in the classroom. In the afternoon, we'll fry your body on the sports field. By the time 9 o'clock at night came, we just collapsed.
So there was some understanding, some very slight perverted understanding of, you know, proper education and culture, how to deal with the impulses. And parents would fight to get their children into such a school. Now it's all different. It's completely different. But even that slight understanding is gone. But their program was, if we're going to raise proper young persons, not simply men, also the women had their schools of the same caliber, same arrangement, we've got to engage you to the max. We're going to, like I said, we're going to, you know, we're going to just work your brains over during the day in a class of four students. And then 2 o'clock after lunch, everyone plays sports, no matter what your ability, because we have to engage your physical energies. Nighttime is for studying, and 9 o'clock, everyone collapses. They knew it was scientifically designed, according to their science, to do that. How to engage all the senses. And then, when it's time for graduation, you know, the whole school staff knew that they would be held accountable. How many of our students are going to the Ivy League schools? Like, how many are going to IIT? If the school didn't send if the school didn't send 70% of its students to Ivy League schools, oh, the parents would be very angry. So they devised the whole system to achieve the result. So why can't we have a system to achieve the result of Krishna Bhakti? And it does require determination, it does require tolerance. So that is what I remember from that mundane situation. It took determination and tolerance. To attain the final reward. I remember when all the university acceptances would come on the same day from the Ivy League schools. And so the students would go to their mailboxes to check their post, and all the faculty would be hovering around watching, you know, have all our efforts paid off? Is our school reputation going to be intact? The students would open their letters, and the faculty would be watching. Oh, very good, very good. They would mark on the list, yes, Yale, Harvard, Princeton, very good. If someone went to a state school, University of Massachusetts, University of New Hampshire, that was considered, we failed in our duty. But the happiness on the students' faces, we have achieved the goal. What does that compare with the happiness of pleasing Krishna and going back to Godhead? But these students sacrificed so much. They put up with so much to attain this goal. Just to get a momentary, flickering material happiness. Why can't we do that for Krishna? So that's what I remember about that situation. All right, it's getting late. You're making me talk too much. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glory to the Lord.